And we're live, back to another week here at Drone DJ. This week, we've got some reported issues on the Mavic 3 GPS. And along that side, we've also got news updates on firmware for Altos Nano and Nano Lite. So maybe, you know, there's a fix to make them actually work. We also have a piece on regulation, especially in states, talking about, you know, conflicts between different jurisdictions and who finally has the ruling. And lastly, I figured, you know what, it's about time. Let's revisit the parachute topic because I've got a video to show you all, and they may just be the solution. Who knows? So back to you, Kirk. Mavic 3 issues. We've seen several reports on Mavic 3 GPS issues, right?
Yeah, so it's been a while. It's been over, I think it started at the beginning of this year. I think first reports I saw were in December when the first, one of the first firmware updates came out that it's taking several minutes for Mavic 3 pilots to acquire enough satellites to get a home lock on their, you know, for before flying. And it's kind of hit or miss also for a lot of pilots. So I don't personally have a Mavic 3, but our publisher does, Seth Weintraub, and he has no issues flying his Mavic 3. We have a video of him, you know, kind of taking off and acquiring all the satellites within seconds of turning on the Mavic 3. But there's also videos out there taking, you know, 5-6+ minutes to get just 12 satellites to, you know, get a home lock. And we had a firmware update. DJ released one, I think it was on the 23rd or 25th. And it was very much, they said very much so, like, this is going to fix this issue. And no one's going to be having this issue anymore after this firmware update. And, well, it fixed it for some, but for a lot of people, it's still, you know.
Felt like it actually exploded more for the issue.
Yeah, I feel like
one of my pilots down here, he just went down to Aruba and his Mavic 3 was working totally fine. We did tons of flights. I was acquiring satellites, you know, like you said, within seconds of starting up the system. But now he's down in Aruba and it's not acquiring satellites.
Yeah, like it. I think for it's weird how this is working, because for some people, like, you know, it's just fine. And I've been trying to piece together, you know, who's having the issues, who's not having the issues, and where they are. And it doesn't really look like there's really any rhyme or reason to it. You know, some people might be a publisher's in New York and he's fine, but there's other people in New York who are having issues. And then, you know, some people are having issues, you know, down at the equator, and some people having issues, you know, up here, and vice versa. People are not having issues at those places. So, and maybe it exploded because it was supposed to fix it and it didn't. So the forums are kind of,
oh, just got people more upset.
Yeah. It the forums have blown up with complaints that this hasn't fixed it yet. We reached out for DJI for a comment, and we were told that we could have gotten it. We should be getting a comment. And then they kind of said, yeah, we won't be getting a comment to you. But maybe something soon. That was Tuesday. Haven't heard back since. So hopefully I'll keep reaching out to them and keep bugging them. But
and I wonder if it exploded because finally in the Northern Hemisphere, we're getting to flyable weather and more people actually want to go out to fly, right?
That too. I'm hoping to go out and finally fly this weekend. It's been a few months since I've been able to fly. And, you know, I'm not going to have this issue probably with the Mavic 3 because I don't have one. But if I had a Mavic 3 and I went out to finally fly after months and all of a sudden it just wouldn't lock on the GPS, I would be pretty upset.
This just reminds me, I don't know if anyone remembers when DJI just started with their no-fly zone, right, with their geofencing. And back then when geofencing just started, it was very common that when they have a firmware update, it may cause issues for the drone. So the drone wouldn't take off, or you would unlock if you're in controlled airspace, and they still wouldn't allow you to take off if you were there. So we actually had a rule of thumb for all our pilots. No one updates their new firmware until we update the testing unit and we go out, you know, in different airspace environments, yeah, and make sure it actually works before we let all our pilots update their firmware. And sometimes that takes, you know, a couple of weeks or takes another minor firmware update to fix the issue that it had before. So it was very common for us as a group that we don't update anything until we have a test unit. And I had this conversation with one of our industrial guys too, because they had some issues with their Phantom 4 RTK last couple of weeks. Same thing with firmware update issues, couldn't run third-party software. right? For survey, I mean, third-party software is actually crucial. So they had to revert the firmware update back, and then everything was working. So definitely you can eliminate that, you know, the other hardware issues or anything else is eliminated. It's just the firmware issue for sure. So the other question is also, do you carry a backup, right? You know, let's say some of our survey guys, they may drive 6-7 hours up to a remote site where they don't have access to anything else. They go up there, they have to fly. So we actually had this discussion last week to say, you know, obviously we spend quite a bit of money on the enterprise units, and we don't want to buy another full enterprise unit. So we were looking at, okay, at least the Air2S, you can use it with drone deploy, right? So maybe that's a backup solution. It's affordable enough. You know, we all have the third-party software already running on our main unit. Then may as well, you know, get just a Air2S. And you go up there, if something happens to your main unit, yeah, the Air2S isn't RDK, you know, but at least you get something.
Yeah. This is... A lot of people probably are stuck with just the Mavic 3, especially the cost of it probably couldn't warrant like buying a Mavic 3 and keeping your Air2S, you know, like, you know, maybe you stole your Air2S just to afford the Mavic 3.
Yeah, I always said if you do professional work, right? I always have Mini 2 with me, just period. I always have it charged up. It's just in the car with me. And, you know, anywhere I go, if the director says, hey, that looks like an interesting location, can we take a look? As long as it's not military airspace, then at least we can, you know, just send it up and take a look. Or if something happens to, you know, my Mavic 3 or Mavic 2 Pro or my Phantom 4, at least I have a backup unit.
Yeah, that's a very smart thing to have.
I wonder if at some point, because when Autel just released their Autel Evo 1, right. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons they're given to their customers is we don't have no fly zone. We don't have geofencing. And you can take off anywhere. You don't have to worry about the no fly zone. So I know some pilots, especially from film side, that was having issues with no fly zone, actually bought an Autel Evo 2 and kept it as a backup just for that reason. So if something happens, don't put all your eggs in one basket on one manufacturer. Right. Yeah. But the other said, I actually asked Autel, they never responded. I said, what about liability? Yeah, I understand not having geofencing is great, but that also means anyone can buy your drone and go fly anywhere they want. What happens if they do something stupid, right? Where's the liability on you as the manufacturer?
Yeah. So.
Well, we shall keep monitoring the Mavic 3 GPS issue and we'll keep you all updated. Hopefully, we'll get at least a response from DJI. Next piece is actually on the arrival. So, Autel has a new firmware update for the Evo Nano and the Lite. So, Kirk, did it actually work for you?
So, finally, I was able to update it. Now, I don't want to kind of like throw a whole bunch of shade still on Autel on this because I did have very early pre-release firmware on my drone, and I don't know if that was widespread or not. I haven't been able to talk to anyone that has had the same issue with like me. But yes, my Evo Lite is now up to date and was able to get the firmware update to it. The Nano is not still. I'm still having issues with that, but I have a possible fix from Autel finally directly. They had to go through their technical team to actually like try to troubleshoot it because they were kind of baffled by what was going on. So. I think one of the new things was dynamic track on the light. And so I'm super excited that the light's now updated. I can go out and fly it and try to test that out this weekend. I'm going to reach out to one of my videographer friends here and see if we can maybe plan some sort of kind of like shoot with that and see how that works, you know, with a car or with something for tracking, which would be really cool.
So I guess we shall see.
We shall see.
You have to get the firmware actually in the drone, have it updated, and from there.
At least this weekend, as long as weather holds, because weather was great last week, and then now we have snow again. Somehow in March, almost April now. We're even in April now, and we had snow on the ground this morning, which is annoying. But as long as weather holds, I think there might be a storm system coming through. But I think it'll be cloudy with no rain and relatively calm winds this weekend. So we'll see. Hopefully, we'll be able to fly that, and then I can give out like maybe I read up some sort of first impressions of it flying.
Now, the other piece, I know we talked about regulations quite a bit, especially Kirk talking about the local, right, local mm-hmm. bylaws. And this is interesting because you're seeing the state restriction being overwritten by federal.
Yeah. So Texas had a law restricting, you know, kind of drone use. And there's been a lot of, especially in the last year, we've had some, you know, relatively prominent drone footage of riots and altercations going on, and the legality of especially local saying that you can't do that, you can't fly over these areas.
But that's federal jurisdiction.
And yeah, one reason why I'm personally invested is that my city has something similar to this, and it's not necessarily directly towards drones, it's just directed towards remote control vehicles, which was written back before drones were popular. So, you know, whether or not this you know, kind of includes the drones or not, we don't know because I haven't been able to reach out to anyone yet about getting that clarified. But the Texas law was actually overturned by a federal judge saying that, yeah, no, this is, you don't have, especially for journalists, you don't have the right to ban drone flight to protect, you know, First Amendment, you know, rights. So whether or not, you know, we can maybe take this and move it to other cities that have this sort of restrictions would be interesting because, yeah, the FAA has that authority, rather not the local cities. The local cities can also ban, you know, Cessnas flying overhead. You know, that's absurd. So I don't, it's very similar to drone flight as well.
For sure. We have an interesting comment because I had similar questions about, you know, liability for drone manufacturers. And also there was a question on why DJI actually implemented geofencing, right? When geofencing mm-hmm. just came out, I remember a bunch of drone pilots were really upset. Especially, you know, in North America, people are used to buying a drone or buying a product and having the freedom to do what they want with that product. So a lot of DJI customers were very upset about geofencing. They're saying, we buy a product, it should be up to us on how we use it. I don't need a manufacturer telling me how to use it. But yeah. I guess at that point, the discussion really came down to you have to kind of look at the scale and the implication of how people use a product. I mean, when you drive a vehicle on road, on public road, right, there are structures, you know, you can't just drive on, let's say, onto a storefront or on a grass field without, you know, someone reporting you, without enforcement or, you know, local police started coming in. But drones are a very different topic because you can fly, you know, you don't really have roads. You don't really yeah. have, you know, structures. We have airspace structure, but there are no clear boundaries. And you could fly into an airport and cause issues, right, before you're actually stopped or you're able to stop. And plus, they still have to find whoever is actually flying the drone. So they could potentially see the drone doing something stupid, but it would take them a long time to find the pilot. So that was why, you know, that whole discussion on geofencing and that whole discussion about making the industry safe. I mean, is geofencing the solution? We don't know, but really it came at that specific time on there was a need of making the industry a safer place. Yeah. And not just for professionals, but mostly for people who just went into a store, picked up a drone without all the training, without all the skills, and start buying. And there has to be something that yeah. prevents them from doing something stupid. So
I'll say this as a question, but we don't need to answer a discussion because we can probably do this for the next hour. Is, you know, was geofencing maybe too far, or was that, you know, too far? But then we have a remote ID coming up soon. Is that maybe, you know, how does that work? Because, you know, the issue is you can't find the person who's breaking the rules, and remote ID would fix that. But then also, is remote ID also too far? So, yeah, that's a whole question, a whole discussion that we can go into on a further date, because today we can.
I know we always said we want to have a remote ID discussion on its own because it's still controversial. Right. Yeah. I mean, the industry, the whole drone industry itself is controversial, and no one has a single answer on how to resolve a safety concern or airspace concern. And what happens when almost every family or every worker has a drone, when you have the sky filled with drones, that's a different story. Because once volume comes up, it's also a different story. Yeah. So we'll see. I always find, you know what, with remote ID, if they're going to implement it, it has to be on every drone. And there has to be a single place where you can actually monitor and see that information, not manufacturer specific. So we shall see where we go with that. Now, not to get turned away, but the last topic, because I saw this interesting video from a drone parachute test. So I figured, you know, it's been a couple of years since I revisited the parachute topic in general. So first of all, let me just put this video up. So I'll put this video in the description down below. And if any of you haven't seen it, this was actually, you know, back in 2020, this was the parachute test my team did. So looking at now, this is 2 years ago. So what it came down to at that time was basically three parachute tests on the Mavic 2 Pro, and three all crashed. And I'll just say, you know what, those tests were not conducted by us. It was actually the manufacturer's sales team or local distributor came in. They got training, they had a system, they came in and they did a demo, three deploys and still didn't work. Essentially, as the parachute didn't work. And fully smashed a Mavic 2 Pro as well. So at that time, we talked about, you know, several aspects of parachute. So before talking about the new video we saw, the issue with parachute back then was, number one, it has specific altitude requirement. So how high do you fly your drone most of the time? Above 100 meters? Probably not. Right. But you need enough altitude for the drone to actually, for the parachute to deploy and essentially slow down the drone. And then number two is the drone's going to go wherever wind goes.
Yeah.
So you don't know where it's actually landing. And then number three is people ask, oh, it should reduce my insurance, right? It should reduce the risk of my insurance. But guess what? It does not. Because number one, you're doing a modification on an original manufactured product. So increases risk. Number two, with parachute, that means you can fly over people. At least in Canada, you can actually fly over people if you have a authorized parachute or authorized drone with a parachute. Then insurance company is saying, well, without parachute, you wouldn't go fly at those higher risk events. But now with a parachute, you would. So it's also more risk for your overall operation. So it actually increases your insurance instead of decreasing it. And then along that note, there were several other discussions we had because parachute is supposed to improve safety. But if you look at, you know, we had insurance topic before. If you look at the most accidents happening to drones, it's pilot error, not so much of equipment error. And the parachute is more on the drone, is more if something happens to the drone, like a flyaway, like lose control, then you deploy the parachute. But it doesn't fix 90% of the pilot error. It's going to happen.
If you're relying on a parachute, that's not the problem. I agree.
And also the cost of that parachute was the same price as a Mavic 2 Pro. Like, that's way too expensive.
And how heavy is it?
Oh, I don't remember the weight, but it was very light. It was very, very light. And there were many practical challenges with it. For example, the parachute has a specific battery. Mm-hmm. You cannot swap the battery. And the battery only lasts 40 minutes. So if you're out for events, like if you're flying for a lot of the pilots who bought this were flying for concerts or are event photographers that are actually covering event. So imagine you're out there and the event lasts for a specific time. You need to fly it. 40 minutes, well, manufacturer says 40 minutes, so you're lucky to get 30 minutes, right? Especially when it's cold. You can't swap the battery. You have to take the parachute down along with your drone, and you have to charge the parachute for over an hour. And guess what? By the time you're done, event is done. So that's why we didn't really touch the parachute topic for 2 years because we didn't really see, you know, a solution. But I just wanted to share this video I saw a couple of weeks ago, and I thought this was actually interesting, and maybe it's going to bring parachute to, you know, a different realm. Who knows? So if you look at this,
Now, is that attached to anything? Or no, it doesn't look like it's actually attached to a drone.
Correct. Yeah, this was just attached with a weight to simulate if you have a drone that stopped working. So first of all, this is a guided parachute.
Yeah.
Right? So it resolves that first issue I mentioned about the parachute. Typically, if you deploy a parachute, the drone is going to be gone with the wind. It's going to go wherever it is. So at least this one, it landed within 9 meters of its target. So this is actually a guided parachute.
Yeah. I would like to see how this works like with an actual drone, because one of the issues I saw with the other version was that the lines got caught up in the blades. And that's probably one of the hardest things to probably fix, is because you need to have, you can't just put one string in the middle away from all the blades, because that's not going to be stable enough. And it's a 1-point failure. You want to have multiple, and you want to have across the drone, so it's stable. But you're going to get caught up on rotors.
Yeah. Because what happened is when, the parachute popped, the motors didn't fully stop yet. Yeah. So the way the parachute was supposed to work is it actually had a hard lock on the motors. So before the parachute pops, it's supposed to stop the motors first. But something happened with that mechanism, and it didn't stop the motors. Or at
Is
least
that
not
third yet. Party, a third party lock
third
on the motor?
Party. Okay. Yeah. And it didn't stop the motors in time. So when the parachute popped, it tilted the drone a little bit, right? Depending on the angle, depending on the specific banking angle of the drone at the time, even. So when the parachute popped, it got tangled in the propellers, and obviously it didn't end up working.
Yeah.
There are many, you know, as we can see, there are many practical issues with parachute, but I'll just say, you know, I do like the guided system. I find that interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting, because you can possibly work it out with like the latest return to home point and try to guide it towards as close to that point as possible.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And also coming down to, you know, really it coming down to business feasibility. So I'm looking at this and also thinking, what's the market size? I mean, if you work out, you know, try to look at FAA registration to see how many drones are out there, right? Essentially. And then you look at, okay, what's the user specific for, you know, calling for a parachute like this? You've got to have super sensitive payload, or you've got to be in very complex environment when you just want to bring the drone down if something happens, right? Those are pretty specific, and the parachute is, you know, also it's not cheap. It's fairly expensive. So I wonder, what's the customer size? What's the market size actually for a product like this?
I wonder if this is going to be something that's going to be solved eventually when first party does it, when it's a first party solution. Cause they'll just have that better, integration with the hardware and possibly just the ability to fit it inside the drone itself and not be outside the drone. Because imagine maybe like popping out the back of the drone, or even at the bottom of the drone. If both rotors are above the drone and you're popping out the bottom and it just flips upside down as it falls.
Because you want to protect the payload. That was one of my comments a couple of years ago too. It's the most expensive part on the drone is actually the payload.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then flipping it upside down would probably protect the payload better than dropping it straight down. I mean, I feel like it's falling from the sky in a controlled fashion. I feel like either way it's not going to be great. If it's going to be going upside down, at least it might have a better chance of protecting the payload.
Definitely.
Replace the rotors.
I can see they're probably concerned about hitting someone, right? If the drone falls and maybe hitting someone. But 9 meters is a pretty large radius. If you're at an event to say you have a 9-meter clearing, that's still pretty difficult.
Maybe you have to put some sort of siren on it. You know, they'll let people know it's coming down as well. I mean, either way, people are probably.
It does have a specific beat. But you know what? Going with a warning, it's if you don't run drills, if you don't let people know that is the warning, and what does it do? What are you supposed to do when you hear the warning? It's useless.
And if it's not loud enough, like at a concert, you know, and just because even it could be dead quiet and you hear the noise, someone's looking like this.
In the middle of winter, you know, where everything is covered in snow, no one around for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I just thought, you know what, that's an interesting move forward with a parachute system. I guess on that topic, I'm just interested from the business perspective. How many do they sell? I mean, just imagine the R&D going into this, right? How many units do they sell? Is it sustaining the business? Are they going to grow? I guess we'll find out in a couple of years if the business is still there.
Yeah, that's true.
So on that note, that's all our news for this week. The Mavic 3 GPS issue, the Autel update, firmware update, and a legal update from states. At least that's good news. So if you see your municipality trying to have, or township trying to have some rules restricting drones, you can tell them that's federal jurisdiction. And lastly, we revisited the parachute topic. I'll also leave our original video link in the video description down below if anyone's interested. We keep saying this for the past couple of weeks, but I really hope next week when we come back, the weather is nice enough so we can actually talk about, you know, some real flight topics rather than just general news update. So on that note, thanks for joining us this week, and we'll see you all next Friday.